Now we're at Free the Land. We have a guest in the studios going by the AKA of Dogwood. She's a political organizer. She's organized for peace groups, labor groups, environmental groups. And you know, she's probably the only good organizer in town right now. Hi.
Hi. I don't know if that's true. I'd hate to have to live up to that.
It's not much to live up to.
Thank you, though.
So we like to. So you've been at peace camp a few times.
That's right.
And you're familiar with what's happening there. They could use some organizing. What would you? I mean, the other night you were at the meeting and you brought up what's everyone's goal. At peace camp. So they really don't have a clear goal, right? Would you say?
I think that they are coalescing. They're beginning to come up with some common agreements, you know, some common ideas that they would like to support. The first thing I did was organize the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're the one that came up with that. That's great. I like that meeting.
I didn't necessarily advocate for a nightly meeting, but that was the group's decision. And the group actually is to be commended, I think, because of the risks that they're incurring, their incredible consistency, and to that extent, I have to say, they organize themselves. And I don't want to pretend, and I don't want to go by what you said, because I am a bit of an interloper, to say the least, and they've done an incredible job. In fact, that's why I got interested. Is because to have homeless people being that focused and staying with a, you know, sleep-in protest of the sleeping ban for, like, over 35 days, I think, is when I started showing up on the scene when they were still at the county building. That's incredible. It's great stuff, and it's not easy. So, you know, they are organizing themselves.
That's the best way to organize from the ground up anyways,
But I just wanted to see where I might be able to help a little bit, and so that's where I think at that point, the time that I came in, things had started to shift anyway, and they maybe needed a little bit of fresh juice ideas and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, in the beginning, they started off winning. The police couldn't really harass them. There wasn't a law to cover it at the county building. They took them 30 days to come up with one. So they kind of, that was much more chaotic than what's going on now. I mean, everybody would come in there. Drunks would come in at 2 a.m., wake everybody up and stuff. In that sense, was very disorganized. And there was little they could do about it, because in a sense, you do need some kind of order in society, or, you know, there's elements that'll disrupt it. But now, I mean, with the police, constant police harassment and ticketing and arrests, it's trimmed down to a very small, dedicated cadre that are determined not to give up.
That's right. Right. It's really, and it's interesting to listen to people talk about what's going on with them. That's the other reason that I wanted to take part in that, is just to hear what people were going through, what they thought. A lot of people feel, and I think this has been ongoing, and you're talking about the small cadre now, a lot of people were there because they felt it was a safer place to sleep.
That's true.
Okay, so even though they were getting tickets once they went to City Hall, where it started out, over at the county building, they felt like it was safer in the sense that they wouldn't get beaten by random beaters. And it was also safer in the sense that if they were to get a ticket, they might have the protection of being under this protest, to whatever extent that might help them. So, I mean, I don't think that may have been exactly mentioned. And I remember people talking to me about the women, that women here in Santa Cruz County can incur a lot of risks when they're sleeping outside alone. So that was mentioned to me over there in the county building,
Yeah, at the county building, one of the nights when the sheriffs did finally enforce the state law that they found, it was 647E, it used to be 647J, the lodging law. At that same night, at another homeless encampment that wasn't supervised, someone was stabbed. You know, so it is safer at peace camp than to go hide in the bush, which is what I think Sergeant Harmer's recommended people to do. Just, you know, sleep somewhere where we don't see you, then you won't get a ticket. I mean, that's Rotkin always says that too. You know, we have this law, but only two people a night or get a camping van, and you know, there's probably hundreds of people sleeping. So, you know, that their solution is to go risk your life, you know, and actually I think someone should sue them for that, really. You know, if I got stabbed, I'd be suing them.
Well, it was Ed Fry was talking about, and also another guy who's with the protest was talking about how there was actually a law passed or some type of resolution or some type, I wish I knew the exact nature of this thing, mm-hmm. this legal entity, that was passed in at like 1983 by the state of California that officially recognized homelessness as a very serious, burgeoning, you know, serious mm-hmm. situation. And here we are, you know, so what is it now, 27 years later? 93, 2003, yeah, 27 years later, still nothing is being done about it, and so...
I received an email on that, and apparently it's that cities have to provide a zone for emergency homeless shelter beyond the discretion of the city council. Someone who will own land in there apparently could just make it available to the homeless, and that gets rid of the not-in-my-backyard debates that would come up at the minute it came before city council. Also, I think Spooky Dragon's also been looking into this as well.
Well, I can tell you what I witnessed at a study group that should appeal to law schools around the world, although the students at law schools are currently being sued by corporate legal departments to prevent moot courts within law schools, which is...
Wow.
That's if you're a legal eagle, that's an interesting thing. If you have a brother or a sister or parents or whatever, and you're going to law school and you're in the pre-law track. But what I witnessed at a study group for legal eagles was that there's a homepage out of the Sacramento government that talks about the law that was amended for housing elements. So there are over 500 jurisdictions in the state of California that by law, signed by the governor, have to have their local jurisdictional planning departments lick this problem long time ago. Now, I've seen the list of compliance and out of compliance that was updated early August. And I can tell you that Capitola was found to be in compliance. Ding, 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 we have a winner. San Jose was found to be in compliance. Ding, 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 we have another winner. Palo Alto and Mountain View, which are legendary for huge study groups and endless efforts by the city council research teams, whatever, to get to the bottom of these things, they are not even eligible to be out of compliance yet because their paperwork's been so slow.
How about Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz and Redwood City were both found to be out of compliance. So, personally...
This could be a defense, possibly, for the people at Peace Camp, then.
Well, it could also be a mountain of paperwork nightmare for the city councils that are not in compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to kill trees, but I also understand there can be benefits to get it paying a few cents per page for flyers and for copies of important documents. So, I mean, there could be wheelbarrows loaded up with reams, boxes of paper, hundreds of boxes of paper could be dumped at city halls with the actual printouts of what was found to be required by the new law that came into effect roughly 2008 in the calendar rollover. There's a website for this. The keywords on Google would be housing element 2008. And on that webpage, you can understand it from the fairly lucid paragraphs. There's not a lot of legalese. You can see what the housing department in Sacramento has been trying to encourage local, small-minded city councils to move this forward. All that data is there. There's a PDF format report from apparently a pretty good database, which means that if they put more downloadable documents on the Sacramento website, you could download your local jurisdiction city council's paperwork.
All right, that's great. Ed's going to be working on that as well. Dogwood, I wanted to ask you about some more techniques for organizing. You did ask everyone at the meeting to come up with their view of what was going to happen, and you also recommended that they form like a book that would have like media contacts in it and other assorted things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, those 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so after I got the nightly meetings to be established, we needed to have a regular meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of the nightly meeting is fantastic because things are happening every day, such as people getting arrested, people are getting informed by laws like the one that Spooky, what was it?
Dragon.
Spooky Dragon 99 was talking about that. And essentially we're building our common... We're building our common bank of knowledge, whatever you want to call that. So after the meetings started happening and people were attending them, people actually come for the meetings, which is good. The next thing is to start getting people to talk about what do they want out of this. And not just on the common, what we already know is the common goal to get the sleeping ban eradicated, but what do people want in terms of... You know, somebody who's homeless or identifies as homeless or for whatever reason, you know, they're at the meeting and talking about this. What do they envision? And I approached it from the idea of let's not be too fanatical about what can really happen. But let's just take a few seconds to really let people say what they would like. You had... Do you mind telling us what your idea was? Because I liked it.
Well, I limited it to three sentences because we had limited time that night. And I just kind of forgot. But I believe that everyone has a right to their own land, whether they have money or not. Secondly, people have more than their fair share. That they should compensate people who have less than their fair share. I forgot the rest of it.
And
Coastal Zone supports that.
So.
Well, it's a threat to private property. It's going to take. I mean, they killed a whole bunch of Indians to get this land in the first place. They're not going to give it away.
One of the deepest metaphors on our planet for socially enlightened action, if our species still has a chance, given all these asteroids and long period comets and all that, but. Solar flares even maybe, is that the coastal zone looks at the global commons and says everyone has a right to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand...
You'll get a ticket here, though. You go sleep on the beach.
Apparently in the same way that local jurisdictions are in violation of California state law on very clear requirements, apparently this also extends to encroachment in the coastal zone. People's rights are being encroached in the coastal zone areas. This includes parking. There's supposed to be no parking harassment of any kind near the coastal zone. That means if you happen to live in any kind of a vehicle for whatever period of time, if you live to take a nap in the afternoon at the beach, there should be zero parking harassment. If you choose to have your nap at the beach when the moon is at 69% gibbous or waxing or between 2 and 3 in the morning, you have that right. So apparently whatever people want to do at the beach is supposed to be never be messed with by local jurisdictions, as long as there's standard law abiding.
Yeah, the when you talk about the commons, it used to be the commons in England, which is where our laws come from, I think up to 1588, if you could put a roof over your head and put a fire in the hearth, build a little cottage within between sunrise and sunset, then that was your land, you had it. So there is a tradition, going back to the Magna Carta at least, that people can live on the commons. Now, in the Ninth Amendment says we have certain rights that can't be taken away. They're retained by the people, even though they're not enumerated in the rest of the Bill of Rights. And the right to sleep on the land is one of those rights. It's obviously they just didn't think of it at the time because it was, you know, so obvious. Getting back to the organizing, so what are some other techniques that they could use at Peace Camp?
I think where I'm trying to, what I was attempting to do, and you mentioned the book. When people are unaccustomed to organizing or unaccustomed to having meetings with others and staying very focused, okay, because that's a big part of what organizing is about. It's about having an objective or a goal. Not only for the entire protest, but for each night or each day or each meeting.
A short-term goal.
And sometimes that goal might be decided on the spot at the beginning of the meeting, for example. But other times you're working on problems that have come up, you know, however many days or weeks in advance. So I think focus is really important, for one thing. And these people I would not normally have... people who are homeless, for one thing, don't always want to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be known. A lot of people do take the tack that Mike Rotkin advises, your Santa Cruz mayor, which is to hide.
Mm-hmm.
I myself hide a lot.
No admissions on the show, please. That's a crime.
And so they had already showed a certain amount of focus, and that's one of the only reasons that I wanted to get involved with organizing, is because there had already been demonstrated an ability, an intent, commitment, yada yada. So mm-hmm. the next thing that I wanted to start working on is validating people's visions. So here you have these people who are getting expensive, extraordinary tickets. They might go to jail, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They're incurring these risks.
Some of them have gone to jail.
It's time
for a few days
to see where people are in terms of self-empowerment. How do they see themselves? How do they envision their actions? And that's what I wanted to make room for when I asked those questions. And so that's really what that was about. The book is just a really simple organizing tool. The book is common property. It belongs to everybody. I wanted to get a composition
Uh-oh.
Book.
That's the kind of property the police steal, you know. Better put somebody's name on it,
you know,
so we can get it back, you know.
ideally, as things happen, for example, the cops come like they did. We were speaking earlier before the show got started
mm-hmm.
and took people's property. Was it Saturday or Sunday morning?
They've been taking it consistently. Even at the county, they were taking property.
Yeah, and
that's what a tactic they use. Like you have a book, yeah. they just steal people's property. Hey, the police, they get to you know.
Yeah, and they do a lot of other things too. Like come in with made up laws. They they decided that the city hall yard area was now an official courtyard, and they came out with these official signs. And if you're there at the wrong time, you might get some official ticket.
Trespassing.
Yeah, trespassing now. So, anyway, they're all over the map with inventing things, too. But I want to go back to this idea of this simple organizing tool.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is that, so people introducing, getting people to think about how they can optimize what they're doing, okay? They're incurring these incredible pains and risks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, how about getting more bang for your buck here? For example, cops come in to take property. How about hopping on that media list, calling those news stations, getting them down there right away? But to do that, people need to have an operative meeting list. And the way people were thinking about it was, well, so-and-so, this one person had a media list. But mm-hmm. he was kind of the leader for a while.
Mm-hmm. It was a tyranny before, in his own words. Cause to be fair, a lot of the homeless are what they call themselves wingnuts. So it's somebody has to organize it. In the beginning, he was the organizing factor, other than the outside Huff group that came up with the protest.
Let me tell you, I've been involved in a lot of groups, and there I don't see that much difference.
Okay, all right.
Not really. No.
Fair enough.
Actually, the commitment and the willingness to take risks, I think, was better than most. Is better than most.
Mm.
The unity. There was a lot of unity. So there are definitely big strengths. So the thing is the book. If it's common property, nobody can take it. Nobody feels like it's theirs. And it's mm-hmm. also a way to build a feeling of we're protecting our activism. So if they start establishing a media list in the back of this book,
mm-hmm. that is available.
They can grow on it as a new news person shows up. They can get that person's card and write down the info or whatever. So I wanted to get people thinking in terms of this, also in terms of thinking about keeping a few notes every day. What officers are showing up? What times mm-hmm. are they showing up? Who are they? You know, just generally speaking. Just that's all it was. It was just a very simple organizing tool. And to get people to understand that if we start with something simple and then build on it, it becomes expected. It becomes regular, like the regular meetings now.
It gives them more order.
Yeah.
And focus.
Exactly. It's like anything. You know,
it becomes clear in their minds specific goals that they can go after that day, and people agree on it.
It's like anybody who, you know, you have a kitchen. Until you get a kitchen table, maybe you're like, gosh, I can't wait to get that kitchen table in here. It's going to make my life so much easier to have something to eat on. You know, and finally day comes, you get that kitchen table, and you you know, there's all kinds of things that happen around that. There's all kinds of bonding and unity and mm-hmm. feedback loops, as well as your daily meals or whatever. And that's the kind of thing that you want to get in there and build very, very quickly. But start simply with one thing and see how it works out. It's important for people to get a lot of positive feedback, I think. And just one of the things that I think that it was a role that I could fulfill as an interloper, you know.
Everyone in Santa Cruz is an interloper, basically. You know.
Right.
They love it here, and they come in, and they can't afford it, they have to leave, you know.
So, right. So
that's why only the homeless and the super
but
rich
I mean,
can stay.
Specifically with the sleeping protest, okay? I wasn't willing to incur the tickets, but one of the things I could do was say...
Me neither.
You're terrific. Do you know how terrific you are? Do mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, you were bringing that up.
How
I kid him a lot. I'm kind of critical, anyways.
How many
but
other
I hope they don't take
protests
it serious.
Have gone on for over 50 days? I mm-hmm. challenge anybody in the world to, and I'm not talking about refugee camps in the strict sense, but I mean like in the United States of America, homeless camps that are protesting something really concrete like this pernicious, hideous.
Mm-hmm.
mean as you know what.
You can say whatever you want.
I can say the seven nasty.
Why the fuck
anyway,
not?
I've gone on for a while, so that's just the answer to the question.
You talked about direct action. You like to do direct action.
That's right.
And so, what are your recommendations? I mean, we had some direct action on May Day here, where the windows were broken. Presumably by anarchists, no one really knows for sure. I mm-hmm. thought that was a very well organized, and I don't know how effective it was, but it was very well organized. They diverted the police. The police were scared to attack them. Mm-hmm. They had to call in other police, and by the time that happened, the anarchists were gone. Mm-hmm. What's your feeling about direct action, and how is it done?
I very strongly prefer peaceful direct action. In the case where you have a stigma, for example, around people who are homeless, which the ruling class is very effectively manipulating people's mm-hmm. fears, people's terror of being
yeah.
on the street.
The homeless are the Jews of America.
And it keeps always people happens. In these crummy jobs that mm-hmm. are so meaningless.
Yeah, because they're afraid to become homeless. Yeah,
absolutely. And people will work two and three of these ridiculous things if they can get them. Just to keep a roof over their head and to stay inside, even though California is an amazingly livable place out of doors mm-hmm. most of the year. I mean, and it doesn't take much, even when the weather's bad, to protect yourself from the elements. There just aren't that many elements here,
mm-hmm.
I hate to say, especially in the coastal moderate areas. But, you know, that's manipulated. And just to go back, I'm into peaceful direct action. The reason, especially... in a situation like this, because really everybody at this point understands what's going on with the absolutely skyrocketing rents, mm-hmm. the unlivable wages, the social engineering of a poverty economy, the eradication of the middle class. At the same time, mm-hmm. a lot of middle class bought into getting rich with their Prop 13 and with their stocks and... You know, I mean, I can't tell you how many thousands of doors I've been to with certain issues. And one of the problems that I realize after 100 doors or so is, the reason that people aren't getting behind me on this is because they own stock in automobiles mm-hmm. and that are polluting their air and giving their kids asthma or mm-hmm. their grandkids asthma. And no wonder I'm not making much headway here, you know. They all own stock in Exxon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a little while to realize that, you know, even in the reformist sense and these really no-brainer issues like a certain percentage of kids are all walking off to school now with inhalers, and that's a pretty new thing over the last couple of decades. It didn't exist when I was young growing up in New Jersey even, that, you know, most of us didn't have inhalers. And so, you know, the asthma that's come up with the air pollution, so... It's really astounding to watch the how political activism has been sidelined basically, by getting roping people in. I'm sure you must know that Prop 13 was originated by the hoteliers and the restaurateurs, big business. And they realized they weren't going to pass it unless they got the middle class involved in this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so they do. They get the middle class to say, okay, oh, yeah, well, we don't want to pay so many taxes. So now their kids can't afford college, right?
Yeah, California used to lead the nation, I believe, in scholastic achievement. Now it's way down. I think
it's near
the bottom.
And it's kind of funny because here these people are, you know, complaining and being upset. I mean, professors at Cal Berkeley are getting up and talking about, you know, the tears are coming out. Certain people have written certain books. I won't say their names. You know, how sad it is that the way the state of things that they're going to leave to their grandkids. But it's like, well, excuse me, didn't you, like, didn't
people put their self-interest first over their own family?
Labor's militant voice. I had a guy at that protest who was all about, don't take my Prop 13 away, even though he's Labor's militant voice, because, you know, oops. I mean, to me, that is so hypocritical. And it's so kind of disgusting, really. I mean, you know, I'm sorry to say it, I find it just absurd. And so we're getting what people really deserve, really, and on one level. And on the other, you have a lot of poor folks.
Mm-hmm.
Poor folks who, let's say, weren't buying in as much. Why not put it in a really positive light? Maybe people like yourself and people here who maybe have a few more moral strands in their backbone fiber who didn't buy in. Or who maybe were working in areas like the mental health field, which was so rapidly privatized early on under Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who maybe didn't want to rush out and become insurance salespeople and you know. So, in a sense, what's fascinating right now about the homeless protest is that you have people who are pretty much at the bottom. People who don't have homes. People who are
the lowest class, really.
Yes, the lowest class, who are saying, you know what, we have dignity.
Mm-hmm.
We have
rights.
We have rights. We are sick of hiding away and anyway just getting beaten or whatever.
You know, that's what I really like about the protest too. Is it, you know, it shows them that they can stand up for their rights. It does give them dignity instead of, you know, scurrying away and hiding. They see a possibility, especially the first month when they could, you know, they weren't being harassed so much. They came together. Now they're coming together stronger in the opposition.
How refreshing is that, you know, to work with people who are just being so honest to say, you know, why should I? Last night at our meeting, I was saying, you know, are you guys worried about these tickets? They're starting to rack up. I'm worried about you.
Mm-hmm.
There's serious jail time that might happen here. Perhaps we can have the protest in some way that you don't have to incur so much personal risk or whatever. And I really was interested in hearing people speak to that. And the amazing thing that came out of that is people really are voicing what they feel. One of the guys who's taken on the most risk night after night after night after night, one of the things he said was, people just don't care about us. You know, he used more to-the-point language than that. I can really say S-H-I-T.
They don't give
a shit about us. I mean, they just don't care at all. And he was angry, and yet in some ways, I think that in a way, there's a realness there. The education movement that happened up at Cal Berkeley was really refreshing to see also. And maybe that's what you're talking about, the anarchists who organized. I don't particularly think that type of protest, my own opinion about it is I was smiling that day after it happened. But personally, I don't think that it has enough of a clear stated goal.
Mm-hmm. Well, like the window smashing here was counterproductive. The police got $1 million more. It was I just thought it was well organized because nobody's been busted. The police looked like fools.
But let's look at that. Free. I want to challenge that, okay? Because one of the things that's happened in America is that people are not encouraged to think.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying it's well organized, but what was their message?
Right. Well, yeah, it wasn't. at a smaller level, maybe.
Okay,
you know,
so I want to talk
a kernel
about
level.
Great
wasn't
activists.
A general. I mean, because yeah. Someone who has had strategy would know that there would be a
well,
counterreaction.
This is really important. A great activist of our times, Gopal Dainini, I believe I'm getting his name almost right. He's a great. He basically works to organize around anti-oil imperialism. So, for example, he was one of the people that was doing some great organizing at the Chevron in Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
He also has studied indigenous rights, and so he's kind of on both fronts, and they come together, as you know, local mm-hmm. people working to defend themselves and their land against oil company. One of the things I heard Gopal Dainini speak about in terms of direct action was to having a transparency to the message. Okay, so if you're going to do some action, right, whatever mm-hmm. that action is, whatever it is, to be able to communicate what your point is.
It should be part of the...
And at that point...
Like food, not bombs.
...threads through the entire focus of the action.
Mm-hmm.
To me, to run down a street and to use gratuitous violence, on some levels I might, you know, it might kind of float my boat in some way, but I wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
no, I wouldn't recommend it either.
Because I think that it actually hurts us more than it helps us. And
mm-hmm.
and I'll just end with this. Mm-hmm. Sorry to use this so much. I think it's overused. But I was a kid in the 60s. I was born in 1959, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And I watched what happened in the 60s. Martin Luther King as the obvious leader, but so many people in that movement who were not the obvious leader, but so many people who worked so hard to speak of nonviolence, that was what won for us in that decade, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that this is the whole ballgame or anything, but I'm just saying what ultimately addressed the racism of the white ruling class and the white middle class was that they could not be seen as thugs or people who just wanted to act out or people who had whatever stereotype was going to mm-hmm. be put on, bad manners, wanted to, resentfulness because they wanted to wreck property. And that was important.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. Nonviolence is a better strategy, for sure.
In our case right here. I think there's places, obviously.
Yep. We have a caller here.
All right. Okay. We got a caller. I'll let Coral, she's the expert.
You know, I would recommend nonviolence to the Zapatistas, for example.
Well, yeah, there's the other side. I mean, you know, Martin Luther King was killed. Hello? Caller?
Hey, this is Kerbhugger Chris calling in.
Hey, Chris, what's up?
I've been listening tonight over here at my station. As you know, we carry your show every week, and I got some things to say.
All right, Chris.
Thanks for calling in.
As for the May Day parade and what was accomplished by that, I think it's much more understandable to those of us who are, more tuned in, I think, to the local politics. It was very clear to me what that message was, and that's leave Wes Moss alone. Leave him the fuck alone, or we will burn the town down. And that's what the message was. I think it was clear. I think the city attorney got the message. I think the city council got the message. I believe Mayor Rockin is in fear of his life at this point and is, you know, going to resign from politics permanently after this latest season, if you will, of activism. As far as Peace Camp 2010, I have some comments I want to make.
Okay.
I would like to remind everyone the history of Peace Camp 2010. For 30 days, we confounded two governments and two police agencies and grew something to the size where, at the night before they began the videotaping raids, we had over 100 people present. We had a 45-person drum circle, and we served 60 people breakfast that next morning.
Woohoo!
Now, I just want to remind everybody that that's what that is about. Now, I don't go to Peace Camp 2010 meetings anymore, okay? And that's mm-hmm. true, but you said, Free. But if I were to go to a meeting, what I would suggest is that it has come down to what I told the City on the Hill reporter who was once again embedding herself for the night down at Peace Camp 2010. She's been embedded like five or six times throughout the entire history, including the peak history of Peace Camp 2010. She's going to come out with a fantastic article, I predict, in September. But mm-hmm. it's like I told her, it's become a contest between Ed's pickup truck and the friggin' light rig. That's what it's become. And that's what it's going to continue
I think they took
to
the light rig down.
It really is. They're facing each other nose to nose right now, I guarantee you, down there in front of City Hall, with a handful of poor human beings caught like sawdust in between these two giant machines.
Gary actually slept between them.
I don't know which one is going to give last or first or whatever, but that's what the protest has become. But that's not necessarily what it stands for, and that's not necessarily what it was. And as far as what it accomplished, I think we have to wait and see two things that pan out. One, we incurred a lot of court cases. I encourage people to go over to the YouTube channel and watch again and again and again the video of young Christina Boland getting arrested, a young girl from Ireland who traveled all the way here to America and was touring around and who took to the cause and who took her very first arrest at the age of 19. And I tell you what, she was like a Celtic princess. The way she stood up and smiled and put her hands behind her back is, I don't know, to me, iconic of Peace Camp 2010. Go over and watch those YouTube videos. We have over 100 of them up from, especially during the arrest after the arrest after arrest. People were signing up with me every night on a clipboard to get arrested for that stupid lodging law, which is an old slave law, an old Jim Crow law, that they mm-hmm. dug out and used to try to confound and to crush a homeless person protest. And that's why we defied them. So wait until we see how these court cases pan out. We have those, the lodging laws, we have the sleeping tickets, we have the camping tickets, we have the blanket tickets, we have the trespassing tickets. All of these, I predict, we are going to defeat them handily. And then the playing field is going to change a little bit around here when it comes to protesting, when it comes to this particular issue in general. And the other thing I'd like to see how it's going to pan out is, when November comes along and see how many of these people we have shamed out of office. Because I think that Santa Cruzians are smarter than you give them credit for. We got hella press coverage, man, from India. We had articles written on us in India. I did interviews all across the country, sometimes 10 and 12 hours a day. I gave interviews with press all across the country. We were huge for a minute. We had our 15 minutes of fame. Let's see how this shamed pans out in November. And I think you might find that Peace Camp 2010 did a lot more than people are giving it credit for right now. In its current form, it looks a little dilapidated. I got to give it.
Yeah. I feel it's kind of a shame that you didn't actually run, Chris. I thought you might have been able to win that election.
Well, I don't think so. I think they were prepared to tar and feather me. I had death threats against my life. I'd like to remind everybody.
Oh,
that,
really?
That's not an easy. Yeah, that was public.
I didn't hear about that.
We tweeted it. We tweeted it, and we notified the press because I didn't want them offing me. So we made sure the world knew. But there were death threats against my life, and. You know, and also there was the health problems that you know free from a personal level because we're good friends that I incurred, and also, your brother and me, became extremely bonded. I mean, Gary was in jail for 4 days not accepting food. He was on a full-blown hunger strike.
That's right.
For 4 days, and that's pretty brave. That's, I've done that, and it's not easy to get past the second or third day. If anybody thinks it is out there, go ahead and give it a shot, man.
I guarantee you're going to
find out
too,
that shit fucking hurts after about 3 or 4 days. So,
yeah.
I just wanted to clarify some things, and I want people to understand that if they walk by City Hall tonight and see 3 or 4 stragglers, that that's not what we were about. I don't think it's what we accomplished. I think it remains to be seen what we accomplished, and I think when we win some of these cases, like when we beat back the lodging law, especially.
Yeah.
Might have a new weapon with which to reoccupy public space in the name of this protest. So, I mean, just, it's not over till the fat lady sings, and I don't hear any fat ladies over there at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I certainly don't have any fat ladies over here at my studio. So I say we just give it time and see what happens. I think that we, I'm sorry, I forget what name she's using over
Dogwood.
There.
Dogwood.
Huh? What?
Dogwood.
I think that the point that she made, though, the role does remain unfulfilled. They need somebody with strong media skills. One of the ways we were able to accomplish what we accomplished with strong media tools like Twitter, MySpace, the website, the blog.
I want to thank you, Chris.
The YouTube was instrumental. The photograph, the photo bucket, all of that stuff still remains in place. And Becky has all the the administrative access to those different channels. And I think somebody needs to pick those up and use those because they're quite phenomenal.
Well, I got your email, Chris, on the contact list, and I spread it out to a couple more people. So,
well, Becky has a different list, too. Becky has a list of administrative passwords to all of those feeds
that we were using
to feed the media frenzy with. And those are very easy to feed. You basically just shovel stuff into them, and they go. They go on their own accord. It's really quite amazing. But
I think you did a great job there.
You saw me hold press conference after press conference where, you know, TV trucks came out by the door to listen to what we had to say. So
you're very good at getting media, Chris.
Well, it's
I
want to
thank
really
you again. I'm sorry that you got death threats. You know, they're probably still looking for you. So.
Well, the police were following me around town too when I first left the county courthouse. It was very spooky to have both squads. I actually have a video up on YouTube where I hit behind a wall and then I jump out and I get Sergeant Harms following me. And I'm like, "So what you doing, Sergeant Harms?" And he's like, "I'm looking for crack dealers." And I pan this like middle class neighborhood with my camera, and I look back at him, and I'm like, "So did you find any?"
That's our tax dollars at work. You know, there's all kinds of junkies up in the Poganip, but they're out harassing Chris walking around town.
The one thing about Santa Cruz PD is that was different when we moved it over here, quite successfully, I might add.
I thought that was very sneaky the way you did it, yeah.
That they're Keystone cops. I mean, we dealt with the sheriffs over there, and I hate to say it, but they arrested me twice over there, and they were impeccably professional.
I thought that was a well-organized, when they got you on the first time, learning you're on the other side. It was a very sneaky ambush.
Yeah, and they also did me bad and made me quite ill with the way they treated me by holding me in the tunnel for some hours.
Without
but they made up for it the second time when they served me dinner and, you know, had a doctor meet me and, you know, basically gave me the royal treatment and had me out in an hour and 45 minutes. So, you know,
let's not give them too much credit. I mean, you might have been eligible to sue them, and they're probably covering their ass.
Well, I still go over there and sleep at night, so don't tell anybody.
Hey, don't be saying that, Chris, when you got death threats out. I mean, I heard somebody was shooting BB guns from the other side of the park at the courthouse.
Well, that was what they threatened to kill me with, was a rifle, actually. It was quite spooky, and there was more. There was hate mail. I got regular hate mail for weeks that I never mentioned to anybody. I only mentioned it to the press and to everybody.
You know, I was surprised, actually, that you weren't getting it, but now I know.
Well, I was right along. I just didn't say anything to anybody.
Because you were quite out front there. You were the face of peace camp for some time. You brought some order to the camp, too. It got a little scary there before you showed up.
I have a question for Chris.
Okay, Dogwood has a question.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you called in because, I mean, you can just hear the energy level because you do know what happened. As I said, I feel like more of an interloper and... let me talk, okay? I don't think the protest is over. In fact, at all. I do think that it's small right now in terms of the numbers of people who are at it, but I think that, you know, there's a lot to do here. And what my concerns are, I think, are a little bit coming from a different angle than yours. But I'm really glad that you called in to really inform people about what has been happening since the beginning and your role in it and all that. But my question is a little different. What was the point of that protest where the down Pacific Avenue Mall in Santa Cruz, what was it? Because I was standing around with all these people the next morning, and literally none of us knew. I mean, whatever sentiments people had, you know, some people felt it was horrible, just awful. Look at that. Oh, one girl,
Which one was this?
It might have been the march, because we got a lot of...
There was one to City Hall.
To the anarchists, the one that went down.
Oh, the May Day riot.
Yeah, May Day. Okay, it was May Day.
Well, no, the May Day riot is quite simple. I mean, it was a message directed at our city government because they had taken up the hobby of attacking... I guess you might call him, if I was the mayor of Peace Camp, then Wes Modes is the mayor of the anarchists here in town. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't think they believe in rulers.
He's an iconic figure. He's an activist. He's the founder of the Sub Rosa community space and really an instigator in that whole community space, including all the other ones that are there, the bike church and all that, mover and a shaker. And I believe that was... some of the younger anarchists saying, look, if you're going to screw with him and you're going to try to convict him and put him in jail on these trumped-up bullshit charges
walking in a parade,
politically active, you know, we'll burn your fucking town down. because these are anarchists and they just don't give a shit. They're not people. They're not pacifists, and that they are what they are. And they went out, and I think the message was very clear. I mean,
the city
came at West, and the anarchists came at the city and caused them, you know, a bunch of pain. And
that was the feeling.
I don't know if they got the message or not, but we'll see, I guess.
Among the press and the police, too, that somehow Wes Modes was behind it. But he was actually at a dinner at the night, so we can't say that it was.
I think he was the cause of it, though. He was definitely the inspiration for it. I think it may be. Difference, you know? I mean,
one of the aspects that I'm really interested in the peace camp right now is that people there, who are still showing up there, okay, whether they were there before or not, I don't particularly know, because I really wasn't there much at the county building when you guys were there. What's happening right now is a sense that people are beginning to speak up. And one of the problems that we traditionally have in our movements on the left are a few people become the leaders, and these people are often, like yourself, very highly skilled people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've got all these skills, computer speaking, courage, your organized thinking, all this stuff that's going on, Chris. But not one of the things we need more of in our movement is more people feeling
the stake in it as well.
More people just having the space and having the support and the safety in actions like this or protests, whatever you want to call it, where they can flex their muscles and say something, you know, first amongst each other. And, you know, there's a person there, I'm kind of a little hesitant to use people's names, and she said the other day, you know, that we have these humane societies for cruelty to animals. What about cruelty to these people, to us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she made that point, and it's kind of like she's not a big talker, and everybody just kind of stared at her for a few seconds because it was like, yeah, you're so right, you know, we all felt it. And anyway, there's some stuff coming up in the near future. I think we're trying to have a bit of secrecy around it, so I'm not necessarily going to mention everything right here. But
big thing happening.
Well,
at
hey, Free,
peace
I'm
going
to let you go. I got some business over here at my studio to take care of and make sure your show stays on the air and everything. But I did want to call in and set the record straight.
Well,
I think there's a lot that's going to be said and done before this is done. Look for the court cases. There's going to be big protests at the county building for every one of our upcoming lodging tickets and everything like that. And, you know, I think, and even the Wes Modes thing, that's still an ongoing drama as well as the Sing Song 4 trials, which I think are hugely
That's coming
important,
up soon, too, yeah.
Whether or not the heckler veto is gonna hold in Santa Cruz. So there's a lot of important stuff going on around this, and I think Peace Camp is still a perfectly valid thing. Like I said, it's funny, but it has become a contest between the two machines, I feel, out there, though. It's rather odd and spooky, but hey, you know, odd and spooky is cool. A lot of people did learn to become empowered.
Well, thanks for all your work in the revolution, Chris.
Well, you know, you keep on. I'm glad that Free Radio Santa Cruz got their transmitter back.
I don't know that.
That's all hearsay.
As far as I know, it's just on the internet right now. I'm not committing any federal crimes. Goodbye, Chris.
Can I add a bookmark, Free?
Oh, funny.
I'd like to add a bookmark that was 20 years of work by a shout out to Amy Rothstein and C.T. Lawrence. On Google, if you Google On Conflict and Consensus, it's over 100 pages. This is a war manual, a field manual written by the Food Not Bombs Group on the East Coast. So starting around 87, the Food Not Bombs Group in the East Coast, they put in everything, and they came out with a 109-page field manual called On Conflict and Consensus. If you Google it up, Lawrence, Amy, Rothstein, an old Harvard buddy of Spooky Dragons by the name of Scott Mize, who's a nanotech guru on the Pacific Rim. He's also in the credits, as well as your spookiest dragon in previous incarnation. And that would be an interesting point for people to read about how to help groups move forward step by step.
Sounds great. Was there any tabling? I guess I'm going to ask that question. That was planned the other day. Do you know about that?
Dogwood.
Mint. I was going to call you Mint.
Mint leaf.
Dogwood, you Mint.
There was going to be some tabling about their situation. I wonder if that happened.
I don't know if that happened. It was talked about. I think the police took the table. That was one of the problems.
Yeah, they had another one. But you're saying that the lights were taken away and not put and replaced with anything?
That's right. Yesterday morning, this police officer, should I use his name?
Sure.
Anyway, not sure if that's pronounced correctly. I-N-O-U.
Yes.
Y-E, something like that. It's spelled. He came by and basically started taking people's stuff, and there was some trash. It was pretty neatly piled. It was obvious people had just had breakfast, okay? And there were a few sleeping bags around, and he kind of came up and basically started taking stuff away. The signs were taken again, and I asked if I could have those. And he said that no, that... And he kind of used language that, you know, that kind of rope you in language where you're not agreeing to it, but he's assuming his language is assumptive. So it's like, well, I'm sure you can see how, I'm sure you would agree or something like this, that this is really just looks awful and hideous and it's just so this and that. And my guiding...
I got to say that the policeman stealing people's property just sounds hideous and awful.
Isn't
you know,
it awful?
Aren't they supposed to stop these? Shouldn't they go be arresting themselves right now?
You know, what I wanted to say is the first thing I wanted to try to do is keep people's stuff from being taken. And I didn't want to argue with him. Like, I didn't want to get into the type of exchange where I'm arguing with him. So I start talking to him, and I'm like, well, you know, that person just went to the bathroom around the corner. When I said that it was just a little bit of trash, I don't think it really looked that bad. But he was trying to make it out that it was so horrible, and it looked easy to dispose of to me. It wasn't like it was strewn all over. It was obvious people had just finished eating breakfast.
It wasn't that bad at the courthouse either, except for Kobika's pile.
And he wanted to pretend. and again, here is, I think, something that we need to really think about, is he was pretending that this was not an ongoing protest, that people were sleeping there and eating there. In other words, people were living there as an aspect of the protest. But he had this pretense going that you know, I mean, if somebody eats something in a wrapper, right, and maybe a few things in a wrapper and has a cup of coffee and this and that, you know, it's likely wherever you eat, whether it's on your kitchen table or what, you might leave it there for a second while you go to the bathroom and you might throw it away a little later. I mean, come on, guy, right? So he's acting like this is so horrible and this is what people hate.
Well, that's all they have to complain about is the mess. There's no other crime being committed.
Well, but I think one of the things we can say is you can have police departments. You might imagine. I'm not saying I like the police, but I'm saying you can imagine a police department where they might be a bit human. For example, they might grant, you know, the nature of the protest. Just let me finish a couple thoughts here, okay? Because I want to get down to what he really did here. Okay, first of all, he, like a lot of controlling, dominating people, you know, this is what a batterer is, right? And this is the reason I'm talking about this, Chris, is that this pattern in our society is being operated out at all levels. It's being operated out in personal dynamics. It's being operated out in institutions like police departments and businesses and nonprofits. It's being operated in larger institutions, in government things. It's leading to these wars, right? It's the same dynamic, the controller, the oppressor, the batterer that uses. Okay, and one of the first things they do is they don't acknowledge. They don't really have a real refreshing, spontaneous conversation with another human being. This is one of the things that Ed Fry is talking about, that we need more than sound bites with our city government. And he's absolutely slammed in that heinous article by your local stupid rag.
Cartier,
can't even remember the name of that.
I read a lot of his other articles,
paper.
They weren't so bad, but that article was horrible.
So, anyway, I didn't want to argue with the cop, but I did want to try to, number one, keep some of our stuff from being taken. So I asked a fellow who was there at the protest if he would grab the sleeping bags. You could only get a couple of them. I asked if I could have the big bag of trash that he had put a certain person's stuff in, if I could just take that and put it in the car.
They won't give it to you.
He wouldn't do that. I asked for his name and badge number. He eventually gave me that.
Has to give you that.
But basically,
he's sober.
you know, I wanted to observe this man. He also took someone who was there at the protest and put him in handcuffs. This person said that the legal issue that he was being supposedly cuffed for had already been dealt with, and that he had paperwork in his backpack that was in the car. Okay, the officer just kept saying, I'm being told by, you know, the local office, the Santa Cruz PD office, that I just have to bring you down. So here's a person who's handcuffed. He's not read his rights. He's not given any rights. He's just plucked off the streets. And although, you know, it turns out there were warrants. Basically, there was total violation, complete and total violation in every single level. But it began, and I just want to be clear with this because I want to bring a new element into this discussion. It began with the way this man was just refusing to even begin to recognize that this was a protest. And what he was saying, how absurd is this, is that this is what people see that they don't like. They don't like the mess and blah, 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 blah. And I would have liked, if I felt that he was a reasonable person who was actually having some kind of conversation with me, I may have wanted to venture that, well, the whole nature of this protest is that people are, you know, sleeping in and living here. It's a sleeping ban protest they're sleeping in. But he wanted to pretend that it was, you know, just, and he wouldn't give our signs back because he's saying people need to keep them on them all the time. Interestingly, Mayor Rotkin had advocated, if you want to call it that, during our meeting with Mayor Rotkin, that we have these signs, okay? So that's one of the reasons that people had been paying even closer attention to signage, and they kept being taken. So I think what we have to understand at this level is that I am going to bring up the F word here, is that we're not getting any kind of organized, dignified, citizen-friendly approach by the police at this time. And when they took the Klieg lights, they were essentially working to shut down the protest because they didn't want it coming out in the papers that all this tax money was being spent.
$100 a night.
You know, and so what we really need to look at here is not only the random harassment and sort of the battering approach. And it is a battering approach. This is exactly what batterers do. They work to get people off balance. They are fiercely controlling people who use pretend language. Like, they can't communicate. This is not a citizen functional police activity at all. Even if they aren't, like, okay, it could be worse. They could be beating people every day like they did Rodney King or whatever in L.A. But in a lot of ways, a lot of batterers really prefer, if you can keep the victim off balance without using physical force, do that.
And well, so, speaking of off balance, I'd like to see ways that we could keep the police off balance. One of the reasons I say it needs more organization is because they will grab your stuff. If someone's, you know, it's not within a certain number of feet of a person, they're just going to grab it as abandoned properties. That's what I mean by there needs to be more organization. There needs to be somebody within that number of feet of all the stuff to protect it, as far as I can see.
Because
it didn't get taken away at the county building too much until they got arrested. When you get arrested, then they grab your stuff, and they won't give it to anyone else or anything like that.
Right, but you know, you get battle fatigue. I mean, some of these
people. That's the other problem, because these people are living.
For,
you know,
so long,
is, they're not
this
just
down, taking on these tickets, taking on the risk, talking to the
getting woken
police.
Up. They're getting no sleep. They have to go sleep somewhere sometime.
You know, now they're dealing with, you know, courtyard signs that were stuck in the ground the night before, the day before. And now there's trespassing, and then there's I just want to say, The people who have been working in these protests, Chris and all those people who are at the county building, down to this small group of people that are there.
And that's where it's becoming difficult. Since it's such a small group, they can't keep a watch out to say when the cops are coming. It's hard to protect the property. And that's an Achilles heel of the homeless, is they have nowhere else to put their property. They have to have it with them. They want to go to the bathroom. They can't take it all into the bathroom. That's ridiculous.
I would have liked to have seen more Santa Cruz residents. Hello, Santa Cruz, who are supportive in, you know, feeling or thought with this protest, just to come on down and spend a little time, you know, an hour a day, 15 minutes a day, half an hour, doing just that, like just watching people's stuff. You don't have to incur the risk of being arrested if you...
I've done that a few times myself. Another thing is to get it on camera, the police taking people's stuff. I mean, I noticed the police behavior changes tremendously when they're on camera. They don't pull this kind of crap. Yeah. You know, and recently in one of these things, the camera that the peace camp was using was in someone's pocket, that the person you were talking about that got on the warrants, and now the camera's in police locker somewhere. You can't get it out till who knows when. I mean, it's only open for brief periods of times on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then they says, no, we're not giving it back to you, you know. Got to be nice to us. Maybe we'll give it back to you. It's the police are stealing from the public, from the poorest members of the public. The police are committing a crime under the color of law. Why do we have police like this? Why are they getting so much money? The police chief just recently retired right after the May 1st incidents. He's getting $180,000 a year for the rest of his life, and he retired after 30 years.
Which means he can throw coffee and donut parties around the county wherever he wants to get more support.
Well, I don't want to make it a light issue. It's a serious issue. This is the crime that's going on. The police are looting the people of Santa Cruz. They're taking these ridiculous salaries, and they...
Right.
He only made $200,000 when he was working. Now he's getting $180,000. I mean, that seems out of line for a pension.
How much do you think you can make working at the Santa Cruz Coffee Roastery?
Yeah, it's probably minimum wage at all these other places.
How many people are going to get hired at Santa Cruz Bookshop? And
I've tried many times. I've never been hired.
Okay. And so it is. The crime is the nature of our economic system. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is the real beast here. And, you know, as much as I'm talking about this political police person, this particular police person, the real crime here is, first of all, you know, let's talk about the social engineering that's going on. Okay, homelessness is absolutely de facto necessary to this system. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so interested in this protest, okay? Because if you didn't have people terrified in California... Let me tell you how nice it is to stay outside in California. Mm-hmm. I've had some of the most enjoyable times of my life living under the moonlight in the winter here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's lovely. It's gorgeous. It's like
for all you homeless that are listening to this elsewhere in the country, come on out to Santa Cruz. It's great.
Chicago. Yeah?
Sorry, you're not likely to freeze. There has been some people that have froze because you're not allowed to have a blanket here. That's a separate ticket.
I mean, you know, the weather gets hard at times, but let's face it, the homes are more like prisons. I think a lot of the homes that were designed in the Victorian times are silly at this point.
There's another issue, too, on the shelters, the indoor housing. You know, some homeless may have tuberculosis. You go into a shelter with them, you're going to catch it, too. It's much safer to sleep outside.
So let's talk about the economic beast. Okay, so they need to have people terrified of the whatever life is at the bottom of the triangle pyramid that is capitalism. Mm-hmm. So what they do, what happens here is we have, of course they're not going to pay attention.
They have to cover it up.
Deregulated form of, let's nicely call it extreme rabid capitalism, okay?
Unsustainable
extreme rabid capitalism.
Sorry, anarcho-capitalism.
Anybody else want to throw in some adjectives while we're having a little fun here?
Mm-hmm. It's actually anarchist capitalism.
I like how it takes cluster bombs as one of its currencies.
We need depleted uranium in Iraq to maintain capitalism, make sure it's expanding and having new markets. And
like, let's talk about that. So we need to have homelessness to keep this system going, right? Because who's going to work at these jobs?
Right, I want to separate capitalism, though, from the owning of land. I mean, that's where the real repression is, the owning of land. You separate the two. Allow people to have their own land without having to pay for it. Your right as a citizen, your natural birthright.
Land that you can grow food on.
Exactly. That's a digger philosophy.
Yeah,
wherever you want. You know, if there's 50,000, 60,000 people in Santa Cruz, you get 160,000
of the land. I'm not trying to make a big system statement here. I'm just trying to give a name to our current system.
Right, but I want to point out whether...
Because
everybody points at capitalism, and, you know, the fight against capitalism is lost. I mean, the communism tried it. But separate out land from capitalism and do the fight against the buying and selling of land.
I'm not anti-capitalism.
This is free the land, so I'm always going to bring that point up.
Right, free the land. And I'm with you on that. But
global
just
real estate reports, yeah.
We have such a rabid far right. Can we say the F word here? Fascism?
Yeah,
and
that's what it is.
You know, the alignment of the military complex with capital.
Mm-hmm.
Big corporations, et cetera. You know, we're not necessarily talking about... I'm not saying that... I don't even like those isms too much because it gets us boxed in really quickly. But I'm saying that what we have, whatever you call the system that we have, it is absolutely dependent on having people terrified.
Well, it's also absolutely dependent on there being a certain number unemployed. You can't have zero unemployment or people would start getting paid what they're worth. We've always had someone out of a job.
Okay, so let's talk about these jobs that are available. Where are you going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to work right now? You're going to work at McDonald's? You're going
to
work
at You can't afford to live in Santa Cruz. There were working people at the homeless camp.
Let's talk about this. What if you have a degree? Where are you going to get a job now?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get a job at one of the universities where they're laying off people?
Mm-hmm.
If you have a bar or need bartenders, it's easy sometimes.
Okay. So they can't have this discussion go on, you see.
That's
they
right.
can't start having any kind of discussion where people are actually connecting dots between what's happening with people who are losing their homes and becoming homeless, people who were booted out of the mental health field maybe, you know, mm-hmm. effectively 20 years ago, even if they, let's say, weren't even born 20 years ago, they might need some special services that we don't offer anymore
mm-hmm.
because we have this extreme form of whatever name you want to call it where we don't have any social services anymore. So this is why the police took away the Klieg lights. This is why the police are stealing, as you said, people's personal possessions. Because to have people who are effectively homeless for whatever length of time, who are working on this protest,
mm-hmm.
okay, who are showing up and saying that this sleeping ban it's dangerous to public health, number one, because people who are drunk can't even pull over on the side of the road and decide not to be drunks driving
That's
on the
right.
street because they might get a $120 ticket or they might get, you know, hauled in.
Well, actually, it's better to get the $120 ticket for sleeping than the DUI
saying,
on your insurance.
A cop so might come
still,
up to
pull
them
over and go to
sleep.
They're
sleeping.
Right.
And they might say, well, no, they're ticketing people now and they'll find out I'm drunk, so I'm just going to drive even though I'm on.
Well, that's true. You'll still get the DUI.
You
park your car and go somewhere else and sleep.
I'm just saying, it's a public health risk. This,
come to peace camp and sleep. If you're driving drunk tonight, pull over and walk on down to peace camp. It's at City Hall, two blocks off of Pacific, near the library.
Great. So, you know,
this is a public service announcement.
They can afford to have, is a successful sleeping ban protest. That's the last thing they can afford to have.
Absolutely.
And here's Chris talking about the Keystone Cops nature. They couldn't figure out how to arrest people for a while, so they weren't at the county building, and it mm-hmm. really got going. But
I got to take credit for that. That was my idea to pick that ground.
Thank
it was a
you.
Jurisdictional issue. And I want to say that Ed immediately snapped to it. I mean, he's a lawyer. He does not want people to get tickets. And I said they probably won't get as many tickets there because normally the sheriffs don't do it.
That newspaper that I don't want to give.
That's what I was going to say. In the paper, they blamed Ed for them getting all these tickets.
Yeah.
I want to point out that was not Ed's idea to get tickets. It wasn't part of it.
That piece was such a schmear piece.
Well, it was non-objective and not
attack.
Very intelligent. I mean, it wasn't Ed giving them the tickets. It was the police giving them the tickets. They
hysterical.
Are the villains.
In the sense of hysteria. They were completely mm-hmm. hysterical in the sense of needing to just make Ed out to be this complete strange weirdo.
I was very disappointed. I talked to that guy. I talked to that guy 2 days before. He seemed like a nice guy. I read the rest of his articles. He did a really good one on the heroin problem up in the Poganip.
Okay.
You know, I don't know why he jumped on Ed like that.
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think a lot of people have this same trauma syndrome. I'm trying to make parallels here
mm-hmm.
between domestic violence and the role of the batterer. I mean, what we had Bush doing in not really revealing the real truth, which was that, you know, Iraq didn't have any weapons of mass destruction. That was the highest officers in the land who were set about to find those things couldn't find any. So... You know, they justify this violence. They withhold the real information. They justify the violence. These are all the same techniques that standard batterers use. And one of the reasons that I wanted to bring in this here is what were you just talking about? I'm losing my train of thought here.
The Chris Cartier article?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so here we have a bunch of people who are essentially working people, right? who really are not that far away, possibly, from being on the streets themselves, mm-hmm. where they're looking at our system and how it's imploding, and mm-hmm. going, my yeah. God, when is my business going to be the next to go? Or when are people just not going to show up to buy my mm-hmm. product? Or when is my salary going to get cut? Okay? Mm-hmm. And so, but interestingly, they've taken on, it's just like the batter who kind of brainwashes
Stockholm syndrome
that victim in mm-hmm. in a sense. Yeah, I mean they essentially you've got some guy who's this reporter who really put together a piece that was not rational. It did not make a whole lot of sense. It was full of just name calling and blame, and it demeaned the people who are homeless. Okay, saying that they basically couldn't think for themselves or didn't willfully engage in this protest for themselves. It was all about Ed somehow, you know, leading the Pied Piper, leading them away, which is ridiculous. These people, like Gary, Chris was talking, these people who have really put themselves on the line for this are absolutely
some of the best activists I've ever met in my whole life.
So I'm sorry, but the microphone just fell. And I think what we have right now in this country is a lot of people who seem to be so traumatized by the forces and the groups that are in people that are really hurting them. Mm-hmm. They have this sympathy. It's crazy to watch people, you know, who are being targeted by governments like the one that Schwarzenegger is leading and the one mm-hmm. that Bush led and that came before this thanks to Newt Gingrich and Reagan, mm-hmm. all these people who are paying so much mm-hmm. more than their fair share of taxes. Small businesses that are being taxed heavily. Dude, this didn't happen with Obama. It happened under these other
Bush,
groups
yeah.
first. And they can't seem to say that group did it to me. General Motors isn't paying their taxes, okay? These big corporations a lot of times mm-hmm. are not paying...
They control the media.
...any taxes. They're certainly not paying their fair share. And yet you have these people who are acting as if it's all of big government that's bad. No.
No, big corporations are worse. And like Ed's point he constantly makes, it's the union of commerce and government together that is the problem, which is fascism.
It's who's running the government.
Corporations are running the government.
Corporations are running our government. The military
through the lobbyists
is running our government.
And well, I think the corporates are running the military.
It isn't the people. You know, we have had certain municipalities who are really working to overthrow corporate personhood, who are really reclaiming their government, okay? But it's a new movement. It's still burgeoning.
Oh, speaking of new movements, you want to start a People's Union. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, but I just want to finish that point. Can I just round it off really nice with a big kapow?
Sure.
Okay.
I always interrupt.
Which is to say, a lot...
kapow coming up.
A lot of working people, even if they are making as much, let's say, as $250,000 a year, from $3,000 a year up to $250,000 a year, are still not naming who their batterers are, who their oppressors are, okay? They're still going along as if it's, you know, government per se, instead of certain state people like, for example, Schwarzenegger or a Bush, who are doing them in, who are allowing these multinational corporations to decide our policy.
This is the anti-state being
the
anarcho-capitalist, the let-it-be capitalism, don't let the state tax us too much or interfere with our trade. They're essentially anarchist in terms of the economy. Neither one of them, neither the anarchists like that definition, nor do the Bushes like to be referred to as anarchists. And I find it funny, so I'm going to use it.
State. We have Ruthie Gilmore, the professor from Southern California, to think.
But it's bullshit. I mean, they're using state money any chance they can. They just don't want to be controlled by the state.
Right. They're anti-state.
And they don't want transparency.
In state position.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, the People's Union you were about to ask me about.
Uh-huh.
Is it okay to...
You tell us about that. Do a plug.
Well, the People's Union for Green Jobs, Fair, Accessible, Affordable Housing, Education, and Transportation is still an idea in my mind. But I feel that groups such as the large coalition of working people who work at the universities, along with the students who were fighting last fall against the cuts, to their jobs, as well as the cuts to their classes and the raising of the fees, could join with, for example, in Alameda County right now, we have the administration in Alameda County just reaming the bus drivers, okay, as well as the riders of the bus system. There's all kinds of lines that are disappearing, that these are the important lines that bring people from their neighborhoods to their workplaces. They're cutting back so that even if a line still exists, there aren't as many runs on it. They are raising the fares, and their salaries are pretty juicy, I will say that. But the real problem here is I got to wonder if they're working with the oil companies. Because in these days when we really need mass transportation and all kinds of innovative, you know, new ways of getting around that aren't by car, here we have the cutting back of our bus system. And if we could align, have these movements come together. So, for example, this sleeping ban protest, the people of that get together with the people who are at the university who are fighting to keep it a public university. Public in the widest sense of the word public. And align with the people who take buses, who are watching their transportation just go away. I mean, if it was ever there, we've basically got a 1940s bus system in terms of the type of coverage that we have to begin with. So for it to go away, it's like we don't have the horse and buggies we used to have. What do you expect? We have bicycles.
Just imagine 2040.
But come on. We should, if anything, we should be coming up with innovative solutions to rapidly, massively expand public transportation. Hey, if you can walk or ride your bike to a certain spot, you can get picked up by shuttles. You can take buses.
You could talk with Micah at People Power. You want to do it in town? He's kind of about that. You know, but that brings up an issue: is how do you bring these groups together? I mean, we've been trying to do that for a long time. You know.
And
nobody's really
action.
Supporting.
We need direct action.
Nobody's really supporting Peace Camp outside the homeless. You know, the anarchists aren't there. I got to say, our one communist that I know of in town did show up for one of the marches, but very few of anyone else in the community is supporting it. I tried to bring Jillian Greenside, try to recommend her to come down there and get her message out. How the police aren't enforcing rape. The law against rape in this town. I read somewhere she said that you're four times as likely to be raped by a stranger in downtown Santa Cruz than any other city, you know, of similar size. They're basically just ignoring that crime, but then arresting people for sitting down or sleeping or something silly, where serious crimes they're just ignoring.
Well, you know, your question, how do you do this? One of the things that I think we'd really need to start really talking about is how much fear there is in the general society right now. I mean, people are in denial about where we really are on one level. Everybody knows where we are, which is that everything's getting cut back in the public sector. It's gone, basically. It's really not much there. And so people are holding on to what they have. They're afraid to come out for protests. We've got the habeas corpus was done away with. We have these Patriot Act laws. And so, for one thing, one of the things that's going on is we do have this sort of pre-Nazi culture that's developing in our country, where people are pretending, pretending isn't a good word, people are in denial, because it means doing things in ways that we've perhaps never even thought about before. You know, creating communities that aren't based on the dollar. People just don't have much extra money to go around right now. And yet people still are consuming. They're still going into stores and going out to dinner like it was pre... what are they calling this thing? They're not calling it a depression. They're calling it a recession. So people are still acting like it's 2007 and 1998, for that matter.
They call it an Elliott wave. It would be a B wave and a down wave. We got the big C's to come.
You know, you hear it mentioned that the prison system is expanding, but how many people really know just how much the prison system is really expanding?
Well, there's a few peace campers that have been expanded into the system.
Well, so maybe we need to find ways to go to people's doors when people are still answering their door and to have the old-fashioned conversation. You know, somebody asked Cesar Chavez a long time ago, hey, what's your secret? You know, how are you able to develop such a fantastic, widely supported mass movement? And the reason I'm laughing is because it was anything but easy. I mean, it took constant nurturing and strategizing and planning and going back to the drawing board and throwing out certain things which had stopped working and going back and trying something different. Anyway, what Cesar Chavez said is, well, first you talk to one person and then you talk to another. And I think that this is really where we have to go, Free, just to get back to your question. And to answer, how are we going to get people out to support these things? I've been trying to figure out a better way. Certainly there's a place for the internet. I'm just going on and on here. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Facebook and these skills that I'm not particularly well versed at, but I mean there's ways to use the internet mm-hmm. that are very, very exciting and new and so forth.
You've done a lot of organizing, so any tips you can give to the people of Santa Cruz I think would help.
We need to go back to the canvas. To the one-on-one conversation. We need to, you know, here you see Greenpeace out on the mall.
You didn't get on. You were not on the air.
You see Greenpeace and you see Oxfam. These are canvassing organizations.
I see them out in front of New Leaf all the time. Yeah.
Well, we should have a clipboard out there.
Is it okay for a report? Okay.
So. We should have one or two people.
In my live? Hello?
Yeah.
Chris is back.
This is Peace Camp 2010 calling Free Radio Santa Cruz. Do you read me, Free Radio Santa Cruz? Come in, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Beep, yes.
Oh. We read you. Over. And clear. It's good to hear.
All right, well, I have decided to come down here and investigate the report, and I am now live at Peace Camp 2010 reporting for Free Radio Santa Cruz. The lights are, in fact, gone, and this is quite a development, I think, especially in light of my analogy that it all becomes symbolic contest between the machines. Well, our machine won. So, since Free and Coral weren't going to give me a plug tonight, I figured I'd call in and give my own.
You get a plug,
and so,
sure.
And so immediately following your show, which is now airing on my station, I am going to air my own show live from Peace Camp 2010, just sort of ad hoc. We'll go ahead and go live, and we'll get an interview with Ed Fry and some other Peace Campers here in the nice peace and quiet of the no light rig going tonight. So, you can reach the website at ucir.limewebs.com if you're out there listening on the illegal transmitter that Free doesn't want to talk about. go ahead and go over to the
web. That's hearsay. It doesn't really.
You can get a live. You can get a live webcast from Peace Camp 2010.
I have no direct knowledge of that.
After your show is over, okay?
Hey, Chris, don't go away. I have a question.
And I would like to thank you for the work you did for us last week when we came and performed at the City Hall before the lights were turned off. Thank you, Chris.
Well, we might as well get a plug in for that. Actually, that was the Watay group. That's Coral's group that she is. They do Lakota and I guess a bunch of different Indian chants and drumming. And they are actually going to be our featured band this month for the month of September over at my website, Unbroken Chain Internet Radio, which, once again, you can reach at ucir.limewebs.com. And starting tomorrow morning, sometime before noon, you should see Coral's picture of her group and some information and the download and all kinds of great stuff going on there. They're going to be our featured band this month, the month of September.
It's excellent. Are you on 24/7? I just wanted to clarify
that. We broadcast 24/7, and we are live about 15 hours a day with live material, and then the rest of the time, in the depths of the night, we play some automated Grateful Dead.
That's so great. Here's a question.
I just wanted to say, would you tell the people there at the Peace Camp that I'm at the radio station? That's why I'm not there making signs.
Okay, and I assume you'll be coming right on over with the rest of the broadcasters as soon as you guys are done over there. You can come participate in my broadcast over
yes,
here.
Yes.
All right. Cool. All right. I'll see you guys
then. Thanks, Chris.
Bye bye.
So.
That was Chris Doyon, I guess it goes by his first and last name, who's now having his own show. And here we're talking in the studio with Free Your Freedom and
Dogwood.
Mint Leaf. I'm transitioning to a new name.
AKA all these activists with their multiple names, Wes Modes and Rico.
I just want to say, you know, when I was starting to connect the dots, I grew up in New Jersey pretty much in a mall. And when I started to realize there were things called herbs that could flavor things called, like, anything like iced tea, I remember being so jazzed when I realized that mint just grew ubiquitously all over the place, and you could just, you could pick it and put it in your tea.
It's a methyl donor for you that do a psychedelic.
So I'm thinking about being called Mint Leaf now.
Okay, so I guess we could wrap up the show here. I got to get out early since I just got to.
When's the next meeting? Is it every night still?
Every night, 8:15. We would love for people to come on down. Come out of your houses. You know, I feel like I want to sing like the Wizard of Oz. Come out, you little munchkins. Come out of your homes and come down to City Hall. And don't be afraid, because the Wicked Witch, we're taking care of her. She's starting to melt. I'm melting. And we would love your support. The Peace Camp 2010 is morphing. It's changing. It isn't the same, but it's still going strong. And what day are they on, Free?
What? Pardon?
What day is the Peace Camp? It's a piece camp
every night.
I mean, they're on 50-something. They're going on 60 days.
Oh, I have no idea. Yeah, it started July 4th, so, yeah, it's almost 60 days, huh?
Yeah.
Tomorrow. So, 4th of July. Okay, September 1st is upon us.
It's the most exciting thing happening in Santa Cruz. It's all about real change for our real society as it is right now, collapsing. Uh-huh.
It's a form of anarchism, too.
And
it is. The people seizing the property.
And we are forging new ties and connections into the new transitional era, into the new, 21st century sustainable
Yay.
World.
And anybody listening on the internet, when we put this up, you can come out to Santa Cruz. It's the mayor's worst nightmare, that homeless people will come from all over the world and crowd into Santa Cruz, and so we have to have these illegal laws to protect our poor city of rich people.
Which apparently there's some studies showing that's really not what happens.
Anyway. Well, I'd love to see it happen. You come on out here, register to vote, and let's vote these clowns out and take over this town. Come on.
Okay, all right.
The powers that be wanted to be safe, they would want all of us to be safe. But I don't know if they can be safe, because they just don't have a good enough concept of what it is. So I hope they get what they deserve.
It's like she was saying, they don't give a damn about anybody but themselves and their property.
So this has been Free the Land. And I hope that you will feel free enough to be free in your land. And come out to Peace Camp down on Center Street, Santa Cruz, City Hall, Courthouse, what have you. Join all the people there that are making a difference, because they've stand up for what they know they need to do to let people know what's really happening and not just what you read about and what they want you to think is happening.
Yeah, I think this, for me, I like to kind of take back some of the terms here. I'm not necessarily real into nationalism, but, you know, this to me, this is what it's about, to be an American, exercise our freedoms, to join with other folks, to not, go into the exclusivity of, some club or some restaurant, to feel like a real person, but to get out into your neighborhood, into your town. City Hall is actually, I think, a very attractive building.
Because it's your land. Because you're a citizen. The United States, and this land was stolen from the Indians for the benefit of everyone.
Yeah.
Sailing through. Oh, his clothes were coarse and his boots were understand. Then he got hired by Bowery Bar, sweeping up in her saloon. As his rag would sail over the barroom rail, it sounded like he whistled on a tune. You could almost hear him whistling on a tune. And Joe rolled on from job to job, dogs to the railroad line.